It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on RBN Network from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona, talking with Chris Lawless from New Hampshire, part of the Free State Project. And, you know, an all-around lovable guy, you know, that has, yeah, you yourself, I would imagine that there's a lot of influence that you have, your demeanor and your abilities and your businessman and your you came there with your family. You represent all that is holy when it comes to Free State Project. I would imagine that you've been made aware of the concerns from the other guys, and I just want to know, what is their concern? I mean, how are they dealing with the Free State Project and this influx of these freedom-oriented individuals that are monopolizing their own media, of course, and then, of course, the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, will do everything it can to go, see, another Free Stater smoking dope! I mean, you know, how are they portraying you in the media?
You know, that's very interesting. Recently, there was a man in New Hampshire who he didn't have a driver's license, and he said, "You can't stop me from driving." He's been arrested like 6 or 7 times. And in the newspaper, all the comments was, "Oh, another Free Stater, another Free Stater." This man was born and bred in New Hampshire and never even heard of the Free State Project. But you know what? Now he's a friend of ours. And it's amazing how if they hear anything about someone, where, you know, heaven forbid you strap a sidearm and walk on the street, Free Stater. Immediately Free Stater. Anybody smoking pot now is considered a Free Stater. So it's very interesting how the mainstream media has all of a sudden harped on the guns and the drugs, and those are the Free Staters. And it's the interesting part I love is the Democratic Party put out an announcement, you know, a couple of years ago, saying how bad the Free Staters were. Little did they know, one of the elected officials in the Democratic Party, he's a Free Stater who moved. So they really are getting themselves caught up trying to pigeonhole us, and they can't. And it's going to hurt them in the long run because they just look more and more foolish when, you know, people do say, "Oh, look at these Free Staters." And as you mentioned, you know, I'm the family guy. I got the kids and the wife. And I say, "Well, Chris is a Free Stater. We've known him for 5 years, and he's not crazy. Yeah, he has some different political views, but he's not out there doing these crazy things you keep saying about." So I think that over time, they're just going to get the media's perception is being totally blown out of the water from what people are seeing in the reality.
Well, what is the demographic? I mean, you know, New Hampshire is a bunch of, you know, old people retired in their 80s, or is it young people, or is it just a wide demographic? Because when you have an influential project like this, you have a lot of people that are not only do they have opinions that they can back with rational debate and discussion, and not only are they just kind of leave you alone anyway, they're not offensive, not only that, but they can articulate their position. You know, people in power that have been able to get you to do whatever they want just because they're with the right political party or belong to the right, you know, church, all of a sudden, all that gets swept aside and you are a threat. So I'm wondering, what is it that is making up New Hampshire? We'll do that when we come back, because I want to know, you know, the youth in New Hampshire. Is every single person under 25 becoming influenced by these evil freedom advocates? You know, must they be snuffed out, thus the entire planet go down the drain of fill in the blank? You know, there's some people that this is a worry to them. Well, we're going to find out, you know, what's happening to the people that are there when we come back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. And another independence declaring kind of guy is Chris Lawless from New Hampshire, Free State Project. What the Free State Project is not, we are not a political action organization. We are not tied to any political party or organization. We do not run candidates for election. We do not financially support or endorse candidates. We do not oppose or endorse legislation. All these things will be done by local activist organizations with which many free staters are involved, or by individuals. Yeah, we put that in there. Then, of course, you have a lot of people that are doing a lot of things on their own or together and so on. And then on the freestateproject.org, you go there, and at the top, it gives a lot of reasons, you know, why you should go to New Hampshire, why New Hampshire was put up for a vote when it hit. How did it work, Chris? I think it was when it hit 5,000 people that signed up. Once they hit 5,000, then they all participated in an online vote, and they picked the state. And I think main contenders were like Wyoming and New Hampshire were probably the top two, I think.
You got it. Correct.
And one of the things is that, you know, you had an international border with Canada. You know, that's always good. Like where we had the Porcupine Festival, it was a campground that was right near the border. You know, if all else failed, you could run across the border, or you have access to the ocean, where Wyoming is kind of landlocked inside the government of the United States of. And so there's a lot of reasons, but you put a lot of stats up here about being low on taxes. It doesn't take, you know, a lot of handout from the federal government. You're the only state that doesn't have a seatbelt law, isn't it?
That's right. Correct. And we shot it down again with a lot of help from activists. We were the only free staters, not that we're unified here, but many of the people who did move for the Free State Project, we actively worked against it to lobby against it, and it was shot down again. So,
yeah, but why? You don't like seatbelts? What's wrong with y'all?
Can you imagine that I still wear mine? In fact, New Hampshire has some higher rates of seatbelt usage than other states where the law is mandatory. It's common sense, right? Well, I don't need a law telling me that.
I know. Here in Arizona, I'm real big on wearing my seatbelt, and the only reason I can think of not wearing it is because it's a law.
You know? When I cross the Massachusetts border, I'll take it off for a second to just show, you know, I don't tell me what to do, and then I'll put it back on for my reasons.
Exactly. You know, it's just a mental, it's just that, you know, that little gene in libertarians' heads that just like, you know, screw you, man. You know, I mean, it's just, I hate being told. Well, one thing I wanted to finish up on that we left in the last segment, the demographics of the population. What's like the average age? Are you having a more proportionate influence on the young? Are they starting to come over? Or are you unindoctrinating them? Or is that a big fear that the big bad guys have? I mean, what's going on?
So the average age, I think, is we're slightly older in New Hampshire than other parts of the country. However, the movers tend to be younger. I'm in my 40s, and I tend to be one of the older free staters. Most of the free staters seem to be in their early 20s. And they're the ones who I think are going to reach the next generation. They're going to colleges. They're meeting kids their own age, and they're spreading. There's a group in Keene that just, you know, a lot of the whole Keene group, a lot of them are natives. They're just friends of the movers. And so the liberty message is spreading. We call ourselves Porcupine, and Porcupine is not just a mover, but it's a liberty lover. And we just have more and more people. We met a lot of people through the Ron Paul campaign that were natives that are now, I consider, like free staters. You know, sometimes we can't tell who moved and who didn't. And that's a great thing to me, because the more we get of the young people, the more we get people seeing, you know, this is bad, this is good. I think that we will eventually succeed by recruiting young people.
Well, some of your most ardent opposition, I would think that they well, have evolved their opinion? I mean, are they more tolerant? Are they, like, you know, more vehement and, you know, death to all free staters? Are they just kind of, hey, this is a battle we're not going to win? Are they, you know, planning their subterfuge in another way later, going to get you? I mean, you know, I mean, from the beginning, initially you had the governor that was more libertarian-oriented at the time. He was like, yeah, come on in, the water's fine. Well, then, you know, they're like, whoa, 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 man, they're actually coming, you know? And you have some of the people that they live based on their perceived power over others, and they see as a threat. So I'm wondering, these people that were probably the most well-known for criticizing you, are they still? Have they turned? Did they just go away? What happened to them?
I think some of the people who are the biggest criticizers, they're still there. Even some of our supporters, they don't. It's kind of weird. They don't like a certain section of the Free Staters. Like they never truly got it, because they thought, many of them thought, we're going to come in here and vote as a block, and then they vote. Some of these guys don't even vote, and some guys vote against me. So that's kind of a shocker. I wouldn't doubt that somewhere in the long lines there's someone gathering intelligence to collect us all up at some point. But as we get bigger and bigger and more people, I think they're a little bit more fear, like, wow, this is bigger than we ever thought. It's not just a political organization. It's a lifestyle organization.
It is,
and that,
a movement.
That, I think, is the biggest fear. Right? It's the biggest fear that you can't control it. If I can't control it, if I said, hey, I want all the free staters to do this, people will laugh at me. It cannot be controlled. It's 800 individuals sometimes acting together, sometimes not.
Well,
and that's the scariest thing.
I can understand that from their perspective. There's if they thought there was someone that they could go out and just, there's a head of a snake somewhere they can lop off, they would. But it just creates, you know, it's like a hydra. It just creates more activism. It's a movement. You want to kill a movement, try to control it. And I'm glad to see that it's starting to, it's just becoming the evolution of just free-minded people, that's much more effective than some kind of a, you know, shiny badge uniform in a clubhouse, you know? So I could see that happening, and I was really glad to see the beginnings of that, the way I was hoping it would go at the Liberty Forum. And then when I went to Porcupine Festival, you know, I'm going, yep, this is it. Here's all the young people. I mean, you couldn't go to a vendor table without having the opportunity to spend silver to get whatever you wanted. There was a trade. You know, it was, you know, agorism. Explain that to the audience. You know, these guys, they always come up with different words. The word anarchist is, you know, I remember in my generation, they tried to come up with a better word, and they call it, anarchist
anarcho-capitalist.
Well, it wasn't. It was autocracy. That was it. Autocracy, which meant, you know, self-rule. You know, and anarchy, anarchist was kind of like, you know, there's no rule. You know, well, if you have none, well, I guess you're doing yourself. And then it kind of got in. Well, you know, that anarchist got a bad name from, you know, the dreadlock hippie liberal run around throwing bricks in windows or something. And so then they go, well, agorist. And so, I mean, tell me, what do they all mean, the same thing? And what's your definition? And where do agorists come from?
Yeah, I think that they all semi-mean the same thing. I think the agorist is probably the word that's coming the most in vogue, so to speak, here in New Hampshire. And it means market, from the Greek, agora. And the Pork Fest, there were just rows and rows of campsites that was called Agora Alley. And people were selling food, people were selling jewelry, people were selling silver, T-shirts. I mean, you name it, it was for sale. And I think that people got a taste of, whoa, I don't have ask permission to cook, someone's cooking me a hot dog and hand it to me. He has no government license. And it's people freely trading. And I think it was great, because someone complained to me that they had zero sales at Pork Fest. I said, that is fantastic. He goes, how can you say that? I said, the market is spoken. Whatever you're selling, no one wants. and it's a cool thing to me to see that, you know, people can truly trade free. I saw someone return something, and the guy handed him his silver back, handshake. It was great to see all sorts of silver being changed. You know, some people were trading goods. And the cool part is, there was no violence. There was no threats. There was no arguing at Pork Fest. It shows that the market works, and it can be friendly and in cooperation. It was great to see.
You know, there was one guy there that was selling, he was making gun holsters out of leather. I mean, he was a leather guy, and he was making them right there. You know, here you'll see what color you want, trim, do, and did. Yeah, boom, there's custom, you know, holster. And people,
I bought one.
Oh, cool, cool.
Yeah, and Andy from Vermont, he's going to use the profits that he was making to move to New Hampshire.
Oh, you know, and he probably got a really good feel from that event. And a lot of people were selling not only information and books and that kind of stuff. They were having hour-long seminars on various different, you know, aspects of agorism. And they had a big tent there. And you just go in, and every hour they'd have a discussion. They'd do a PowerPoint. They'd have whatever. Then we were trading. And so one guy from Maine brought his electric car that we all got to ride around in, you know, that he built from scratch. And it's legal. It's a road-legal electric car. And a little solar panel on it and everything. I mean, you know, it's just people just showing off all their goodies. And it was, I was really glad to see that people were starting to understand the power of real money, that they were, you know, all kinds of different. And again, the free market will determine what becomes real money. And I tell you, the one thing that's really rising up, it's silver. And we'll talk about trading and business and commerce in the Free State Project, New Hampshire, when we come back with Chris Lawless. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh, and the man be a-coming. Yeah, Chris Lawless from New Hampshire, the Free State Project. Let me tell you what gets the man coming around more than anything else. I mean, first thing is when you challenge their authority in raising of children. I mean, but then this homeschool thing is kind of go, hey, man, you know, let me tell you, you know, whose kids these are. Let me tell you who they're not. They're not the Goodmans, all right? So that they're going to lose that battle, and it's freeing up, and the more they try and push, the more, oh, you're going to make a lot of freedom-oriented people about that. But the other way that you want to get them coming around is when you go messing with the money. You start messing with the money, and they don't get their cut. They don't like that none too much at all, except in New Hampshire, you don't have even a sales tax, do you?
Here. There is a tax on meals and restaurants, but there's no general sales tax.
Okay, so when I go out to spend my monies, you know, I don't have a sales tax at the grocery store or when I go buy a rake or a mower or whatever. Then I got, I think the only one you guys really got is a property tax, which I, you know, I got issues with that right off the bat. But, I mean, you don't have income tax, you don't have corporate tax, you don't have, you know, all kinds of other taxes. So is that the only main revenue that the state has is property tax?
The property tax is the main revenue, and actually the property tax goes to the town. So it varies greatly in New Hampshire by town. You know, I live on the border of my town. One town over, the taxes are lower.
So what's the state revenue come from?
There is a small portion of our property tax that is state. It's a very small percent. But believe it or not, one of the largest things is they control the liquor sales here in New Hampshire. They have a monopoly on hard liquor that the state sells. There's no tax on liquor, so it's actually much cheaper than the surrounding states. And, of course, everyone comes here to buy their liquor. So that's...
Okay, wait. So you're saying they don't really charge a tax on the liquor. It's cheaper than other places. It's just that the state government has a monopoly on liquor.
Exactly.
And
we have them on the highways. The liquor stores, a lot of the liquor stores are on the highways, like in rest areas.
Yeah, because the government, you know, hey, man, we need to get some cash on the highways. here, drink up. So you would think that, you know, decriminalizing marijuana and other drugs and so on, that would, you know, be in the same store?
My guess is that would be, if it's going to be an evolution, that will probably be the next, it would probably be medical marijuana first, and then if it is legalized through that route, it will probably be sold through the stores just like alcohol would be my guess.
Going through the Walgreens drive-thru. Okay, I get it. All right, now the thing is, when you're actually doing trade, I can see it. It's starting to evolve, you know, everywhere. Here in Arizona, we really push junk silver. It's the Coin Act of, was it 1792, that defined a dollar as 0.77 ounces of silver or whatever. And you get the pre-1965 dimes and quarters and half dollars that are 90% silver, and they convert them in. You're like, a little dime is worth about $1.30, $1.40, and they just convert everything into that, and you have some stores that you can go to that will convert your silver into purchases, and then people that are paying employees in $20 gold pieces, or they pay them in silver and so on. The roof, they go, hey, I only paid them, I just paid them $100, you know, for a month's worth of work, or a week or two or whatever. And really, the value of that is 10 times that. So you're paying taxes on a lower amount. I mean, all these kind of things are going on right, not later. And I'm looking at, you know, the people are starting to become aware of how they can do. Well, of course, the man's going to go, well, you deliberately ducked. You're not allowed, you know. But in New Hampshire, I'm wondering, are you starting to see the evolution of a precious metal or silver based or barter economy or something? And what is, if so, what is becoming dominant as exchange form of currency or whatever?
Absolutely, we're seeing silver. In fact, just on my desk here, I have dozens of ounces of silver from various companies. At Porkfest, you probably saw the Delval Silver. They had a table. They're from Delaware, but she's very involved here in the Free State Project with her silver. Probably the one that's going to get the most boost is this thing called Schreyer Silver. And it's in low denominations, and it's silver wire or silver bars in, like, encased plastic.
Yeah, I've been describing it. I got a bunch of that. It's a ribbon. You know, it's like silver ribbons.
Right. And that,
gold thread.
Yeah, it's really neat because he has gold and he has silver. And, you know, it's fantastic because he has small denominations for people who want to make change. And that I can see taking off here. We do have people who barter hours. So let's say you needed someone to help you rake up. I say, Ernie, I'll trade you 5 hours. And I go rake your house for 5 hours, and maybe you say, Chris, I'm no good at raking, so I'll take 5 of your hours of some other thing. So if you're, you know, you're best at designing and or websites, you're going to give me 5 hours of your time. So we're seeing a lot of bartering of time, which I think is extremely powerful because so many different talents of people have joined here in New Hampshire. And that, you know, we can pretty much get anybody of any specialty at this point. It's great. There's a gunsmith here.
Is there a common website that this is done? I mean, you know, if I go right now, I want to find out all the liberty-oriented free state, and I need to get something done, where do I go? Craigslist? I mean, what am I doing?
Right now, it's not at that level where we have a website. It's more you got to know someone type of thing. We are trying to work on a website for the future, though.
Craigslist! Do something. Hey, Chris, I know you got to go, but I really appreciate you spending so much time with us. You know, we'll have you back on soon because this is of interest. We will keep track of freestateproject.org. Thank you very much, Chris. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. Line is important.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Oh, yeah. Your smile speaks books to me. Break up. Religion, everyone, oh, yeah. You're starting something deep inside of me. Honey, you're sparking something this far from me.
Yeah, make you smile. Let me tell you what makes me smile. You know, hope, optimism, you know, the future. The whole purpose of everything that we do is to, this is the purpose of life. Keep breathing in and out. And a lot of times is to keep breathing in and out long enough so you can create life to keep breathing in and out. Protect that life so they can make more life to keep breathing in and out. I mean, you know, it's just, it's a primal, it's that life thing. You know? And I remember, you know, one of the concepts in the, it was probably the early 90s, that almost 20 years ago, that when I first started, you know, reading about that I wasn't the only one. You know, before the internet, think about it. I mean, how did you even know that anyone just, hey, man, I just want to be left. Isn't that what, you know? And then for the first time in, I think it was 89 or so, I went and went to the library and just started pulling out some books. They gave me enough information, the mandatory youth indoctrination camps, that there were these freedom guys, you know, these founder guys. They had stuff to say. And what they were saying, they said, I caught the man in so many lies that I, in the media, and I just started realizing, you take the remote and you're going, you know, on the news, the evening news, you're starting to be more mature. You're in your late 20s, your early 30s, you have children, you got a family, I got four little kids, I got a plan for the future, the savings and loan thing hit Arizona here hard, I'm trying to keep my business alive, I'm going to, you know, so, okay, I'm going to watch the news, you know, that was a mistake, but immediately I could see what was going on. You take the remote and you go ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, PBS, ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and you're just seeing the same 3 to 5 stories in the same order on all of them with a different talking head. How stupid do you think I am? Who is manipulating this? Who's running this show? What? What's the rule book? You know, what was the deal they made, the social contract thing? So you go to the library, you know, just pull out all the books. So the first thing you do, first thing, Declaration of Independence. Ooh, I like that a lot. That was good. So I just showed Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And you know what? You don't need to declare it with me. I get that call. I used to, when I first started my shows back years ago in 03, 04, people going, yeah, how do I declare my independence with you? Well, you don't have to. You can do it on your own. Let me tell you how you do it. Here you go. I declare my independence. See how easy that was? And what do I always say? You don't even need a government form. That was kind of the whole freaking point. You know, I want to get a government form to declare my independence. I want to homeschool my children and declare my independence from the man and raise my own kids. Oh, yeah, right after you get permission. You know, you got to communicate. Well, here in Arizona, there is a provision. It says something like kind of what Chris was talking about in New Hampshire. You inform the department of whatever that you're going to something. You know, I can't remember what the exact verbiage, but it wasn't very clear about it either. So what I did is I remember it was my son, I think it was second, third grade. So it was my youngest was starting kindergarten. My oldest was kind of probably think third, fourth grade. So when they were young, I could see what was going on, where this was going. It had nothing to do with education. It had all about them just being sitting quiet in the. And it wasn't because my kids were having any problems. It was because my second oldest, my son, he was the perfect student. He'd sit in the corner and just kind of, hey, man, you know, I'm contemplative, good and be a good doobie and not violate anyone's self-esteem. And he was the perfect kid, but he wasn't learning anything. I'd ask him, what'd you do today? What'd you do? I go sit in classes and so on. I could see. They just wanted potted plants. You know, give me the money. And I'm going, wow. We could not possibly do any worse. Couldn't possibly. You know, have them watching, you know, Sesame Street reruns all day. I mean, you know, you could not possibly do worse. Couldn't. We're done. But you got to inform them. So what do? First day of school, you know, that was like the end of the school year or something. And I said, waited till the next, you know, I'm supposed to inform them. Okay, it's all good. We had already started doing stuff, getting ready to homeschool them and started homeschooling and stuff then. And then we went to a charter school and then we went to private school and got a little older. So we're just going, all right. What do I got to do? I got to fill. Where's the law? What does it say? I'm supposed to inform them. Okay, not a problem. First day of school, I go into the office. And Mr. Hancock, how you doing? You know, and I never got into big giant. They knew my position. You know, I'd already been running, you know, doing this libertarian thing by then, and that had no, you know, illusions. I go in, I said, can I borrow, you know, your pad there? You got a pen? Okay. And the pad was those pink little while you were out phone message things. So I tear off one of them, turn it over in the back. To whom it may concern, the Hancock children will no longer be attending public school or whatever. And I signed it and handed it back to them, walked out, and never went back. That was it. You know, you're supposed to what? It says I am four. I did. There it is. You know, they knew who I was. I did. They were going to say I didn't do it. You know, try and come make my freaking day. Now I have a whole big giant case about, you know, how I'm going to inform you. I even got to inform you. You're lucky I even did that. I claimed my children from the state with a little piece of paper. The fact that you even had that law to do it bothered me. I'm like, oh, this is all you're getting. A little pink while you were out slip. Yeah, while you were out, I just informed you, FYI. So this is expanding, you know, throughout the realm. In fact, you have people that have started doing this, seeing how bad, you know, this has gotten, you know, for a lot of reasons. And there's all kinds of, you know, you had Black Monday. You know, the stock market took a dump and, you know, a lot of people, retirement and everything, you know, kind of nailed them back then. You know, then you have, you know, and more it gets to the point to where you start having communication. I could see in 1994 when you started having an email list, how people were communicating with each other, how rapidly, within weeks, months, if you knew where to go, all of a sudden, boom, this information was just flooding in to your email. Then you started having websites. Websites. Oh, my goodness. You got all this research. And, of course, the first people on there were a lot of the people that had done this research. They were the patriot types. You know, they were the ones that send you off in the court and going on about all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was just information overload. I mean, a lot of good stuff was in there, but it was just way too esoteric, way too, you know, kind of you're counting on the judges must do this and supposed to do that. And a lot of people, younger people, they're supposed to do a lot of things or not do a lot of stuff, and they do it anyway. So I'm going to, you know, come with this great argument. They're going to slap themselves in the forehead and go, oh, as long as you explained it that way. Heck no. It was just the realization of who the real bad guys were and why and what you could do to get away from. And it was all about changing the culture. That's what they're finding out in the Free State Project. That's what I knew from experience of a long time. Because the guy that, you know, we should have talked about that. We'll do that another time. You know, the Free State Project history was, I hate to get it wrong. Let me see if they got something on here. What it was a young man that did this as a paper with for Yale or something. And I met him, I think his name is Jason or Jordan. And what he did is he decided that, you know, we're going to pick a state that has certain criteria that is going to, we're going to take and find one that has takeover ability. You know, it's a small population, it's kind of freedom oriented, you know, it's low taxes, and we can go in and we can rule. You know, so a lot of people were kind of, you know, that's, here we go. The Free State Project was founded in 2001 by Jason Sorens, then a PhD student at Yale University. Sorens published an article in the Libertarian Enterprise highlighting the failure of libertarians to elect any candidates to federal office and outlining his ideas for a secessionist movement and calling people to respond to him with interest. The movement has since then come to emphasize secessionism much less strongly when Sorens published a note in the journal to this effect in 2004, Sorens has stated that the movement continues an American tradition of political migration, which includes groups such as Mormon settlers in Utah and Amish religious communities and, you know, other examples throughout history. The group movement began without a specific state in mind, and it kind of evolved to where they, you know, they wanted to do New Hampshire. But it there is a Free State Wyoming. A lot of people just said, man, I don't want to go over to the social. I want to be in the West, man. I want to be more sparsely populated. So Wyoming has its own thing. You know, a lot of people did go to Wyoming doing the same kind of stuff with much less structure. And there was a book written by Boston Tea Party, which is his real name is Kenneth Royce. He wrote a book called Moulin Le Bay, which is the Spartans, you know, when the Persians came and, you know, the movie 300, when they go, lay down your arms, and then they go, come and take them if you can. Well, that's what Moulin Le Bay means. Yeah, you want them? Come take them. You know, sword's right here in my hand. You want it? Come get it. You know? They go, well, we will cloud the skies with our arrows. Yeah, we'll fight in the shade. You know, that's all good. Bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. Well, that book, Moulin Le Bay, was all about, as a novel, that was all about how you would politically take over Wyoming for using the same kind of method that Free State Project. But from the beginning, many of us that have been seasoned in this movement for a long time understands that the mindset, it has to evolve from that we are going to take over the positions of power. You just become them, and you legitimize this collectivization of power. I won't wear with, you know, the ring. I would do good with the ring. You know, I'd be the good guy. I would, but through me, it would wield such evil. So I knew that, you know, just from, you know, yeah, I pretty much knew. A lot of us did. You know, we'd have this debated at the Freedom Summit, and we'd have people come speak on both sides. And we'd, you know, so it was, you know, we made our position pretty clear. I mean, even the first day that they chose the Free State Project to be in New Hampshire, that next day I had Amanda Phillips on. She was one of the principals in that, a Harvard Law student and very smart individual, a pilot. She had a child. She's a single mother, and she's just very intelligent, high IQ, very involved in this. And you know, I wonder what she's doing now. But, you know, she was very adamant about, you know, a political solution. Well, immediately, my first question is, okay, so now you guys are going to have a clubhouse? How's that going to work? You know? So they it evolved into where they, because out of necessity, to get free-minded, oriented, liberty-oriented people to move somewhere and then try and put them in a club or label them or get them to, you know, it's how do you herd cats, you know? And that's a, you know, famous libertarian saying, how do you herd cats? You know, you're sitting there, debate society, how many libertarians can dance on the head of a pin? I'm more libertarian than you because I'm more libertarian. Well, that's, you know, all that was a waste of time. What was important was that, you know, can I just advocate being left alone and go be, heck, you can be socialist all you want. You know, I don't have a problem. You want to be socialist in your little commie commune up on the farm, de la whatever, and you're, as long as you're not forcing me to participate, you're not forcing me to fund it, you're not forcing me to give up my land to provide for you to do it, you're not for you. You want to do it voluntarily in your own little thing, you know, I'm good. Then it'd be nice if the people could leave if they wanted to, you know, that'd be cool, you know, but even then I'm just, hey man, it's not my problem. Are you making me do something? Then it's, you know, it's not my deal. So they go, I tell you what, the conversation, whenever this comes up, they'll go, well, that kind of it doesn't work. And if you can't force people to redistribute the wealth, then you won't have it redistributed. I'm going, it's kind of my point. So this mentality of just being left alone is old. It's old. It's not a new concept. It's an old concept in opposition to another old concept. Thou shalt be my slave. And the reason, you know why? Because I can do it and I got bigger guns. It was one of the, in the mid-90s, we had a newspaper called the Arizona Libertarian that eventually, you know, became, you know, it was called Citizens Taking Initiative and became the Arizona Libertarian, and it kind of evolved into the Western Libertarian Alliance newspaper, and it became Freedom's Phoenix. There was always this evolution in technology that got to Freedom's Phoenix. The kind of stuff you see on freedomsphoenix.com is the kind of stories that we would, you know, highlight, just look, this is what's coming. And one of the articles I remember, it really had a big impact on me. I can't remember who wrote it. And it was called Crossbows to Cryptography. The reason was, at the time, there was a professor at, I think it was at Stanford or something, came up with PGP encryption, which stands for Pretty Good Protection. And he understood what the government was going to do. Here comes this internet thing. They didn't want to have any secrets. No. We can get inside the subject's head, finally, for the first time, the king can get inside your head. Well, now we're voluntarily doing it. I got my Facebook account. Here's my pictures, picture of all my friends. Here's my favorite movie. Here's my most impersonal thoughts and my favorite color. This is the books that I read. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, the NSA is kind of going, thank you for playing. Well, in the early days of the internet, there was this concept of, can I be private in my communications with other people? Well, this guy came out and he put PGP, Pretty Good Protection, and then I have to explain how it works. You know, it's a public key and a private key, and you can unlock and you send, you know, encrypted emails and so on. Anyway, you send it out. It was free on the internet. It was one of the first open source cards. He even went to a payphone, did one of those little old, you know, modems. You put a phone from a phone booth into a modem on a computer he had there, on a laptop back then or something, and boom, and he put it up and he loaded it onto the internet to a bunch of bulletin boards, which is kind kind of the early days of a website. You know, it's called BBSs. There were bulletin board services on servers. You dial in a phone number, and it would download all your email, you know, and you'd upload your email. It was kind of the beginning of the web. And I remember they call it Paul Revere Net here in Arizona, and there's all kinds of different things. I mean, once you get technology out there, there's always some libertarians going to make use of it. Well, what they did is he put this encryption out, and people started doing it. Boom! Janet Reno went after him. They arrested him. They were trying him for what? A munitions violation. He was, they classified encryption as a weapon that was being exported outside of the United States territorial waters, and he's going to go to jail. Oh, you're not allowed to be secret. Well, there's an evolution of that, and finally it came around. This clipper chip thing was coming from Reno and all this stuff. We'll talk about this when we come back. Can you be secret?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Yeah, it's a very nice place.
I see skies of blue.
It's all about positive thinking.
And clouds of white. The bright, blessed day. The dark, sacred night. And I think to myself,
Louis Armstrong.
What a wonderful world.
It is a wonderful world, you know, and it's just, you just get the, you know, the bad guys out of my freaking way and, you know, it'll take care of itself, you know, but there'll be people that will, what? They'll be better off. I can guarantee you that. You know, people are good. They want to do the right thing. You know, they have, you know, moral, they see the benefit in not letting people suffer if they had the capacity to do it. Oh, you don't think so? It's called history. Of course we do. You know, but you're not allowed. You know, the reason I brought up this PGP encryption thing, it was an article that we did in a newspaper. It was called Crossbows to Cryptography. And it's while this was going on, while the government was going after this guy, that just created a easy little, I don't know, it wasn't a whole lot of bits, you know, the 64-bit little encryption thing. And he put it out there. Wasn't a law against it. There was nothing, you know, but they made something up. They would go after him. And finally, people would go to the trials with the code, you know, silkscreen on T-shirts. So when the network television was showing the people out there, they go, see, NBC, they're transmitting the encryption code out in the news. They should go to jail. I mean, it's just so stupid what the government was doing. Why? Because they can. There was the internet wasn't developed enough to be able to just slap them around or retransmit the video or to make an issue. And, you know, now they have to do something, the internet. They just have to. There's going to be some kind of big, giant cyber attack and everything. But, oh, the terrorists got the internet and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, the thing is, there's so many guys on the internet and they track. They go, you know what? That's not the truth. So what are they going to do, kill everybody? You know, that knows anything about, I mean, maybe. It wouldn't surprise me. But the article's Crossbows to Cryptography was about the king, medieval times in England, they had a ban on crossbows. You couldn't have a crossbow. It's like, you know, gun ban or something. You couldn't have a crossbow because the king's men could and the knights could, because you had the longbowmen. They get out. That took some skill. I mean, you had to have some strength. You had to have some skill to be able to shoot an arrow and penetrate somebody's armor or something. So what happened was they said, we're going to go ahead and have a ban on crossbows because the farmers and the peasants and so on, you didn't have to be as skilled to operate a crossbow. You got a blacksmith making the bow part, you know, it's a steel or whatever mechanism they came up with. You know, crossbows are like, you know, machine guns of the day. I mean, you're like, ooh, can't let them have a crossbow. You're out there plowing your field, you get a little ox cart and you're plowing, whatever, all of a sudden you just pull a crossbow off the side and the king's men start showing up and the bolts start going through the armor and taking out the bad boys. You can't do that. Well, so the article was about that, from crossbows to cryptography. It's always about limiting the power of the individual. It's the same mentality, been going on forever. But it's changing because technology is changing. They have to get more and more oppressive to milk you more and more. And it's so obvious. Government does not work. And I want my money back! We'll be with you again tomorrow here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. Hey, you know how to be free? You do it in your head. Well, at least that's where it starts. We'll talk to you tomorrow.